Some people say to me, what business the church people have running the 10K? You know, stay in your church building, sing your hymns, pray your prayers, and keep out of normal life. In fact, when we first talked about the idea of love running, even some Christian leaders said to me, this isn't for us. This isn't the kind of thing that we should do. For a start, it happens on a Sunday, and you should go to church on a Sunday, not run on a Sunday. But what's this got to do with the price of fish in Norway on a Thursday? This has got nothing to do with Christianity. Let me tell you this, and listen to me. This is everything to do with Christianity, because it's everything to do with Jesus. One time when Jesus was in a particular situation, it caused a little bit of controversy. People were irate. They didn't like what he was doing. Basically, he had a reputation for hanging around with people on the margins of society. You know, the people you're not supposed to associate with, because that's like you're endorsing them. You know, if you go to someone's house, if you have a meal with them, particularly in Jesus' day, you're kind of saying that it's okay what they do. It's okay that they're a prostitute, or it's okay that they're a tax collector, or it's okay that they're involved in fraud, or they're a mugger, or a petty criminal. You're endorsing what they're doing. And there's a bunch of people, as Jesus sits down to eat with ordinary, regular, messed up, broken people, the religious ones say, what are you doing? Explain yourself. They mutter, they murmur. Jesus doesn't defend himself, doesn't explain himself. He doesn't say, I'm doing this because this is what I'm supposed to do. He tells a story. But the story that he tells is not the story that you're expecting. You're expecting him to tell a story about himself, about being the Messiah, about being God's servant on earth. He doesn't. It's almost like he totally sidesteps what they're saying about him. And he says, look, it's not about me. It's about who God the Father in heaven is. And he tells a story about God the Father in heaven. And the story staggers them. It's amazing. This is how the story of Jesus goes from the book of Luke. In fact, before we get into that, let me just give a little bit of context. We had our reception earlier on, and we talked about the reason that Metro exists. And quite simply, we exist to help people find and follow Jesus, mobilizing them to love one another and serve their city. So we have the four symbols you see on people's t-shirts: find, follow, love, and serve. And this thing really is all about serving. It's all about the arrows pointing outward, outside of this building, outside of our little protective bubble, outside to where it's needed the most. And so this is the story that Jesus tells. He says this: there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he'd spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am, starving to death. I will set out, go back to my father, and say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. So he got up, went to his father. But while he was a long way off, his father saw him, was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe, put it on him, put a ring on his finger, sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. Now, it's an amazing story. And if you've ever been around church or school assemblies in the past, you may have heard it. It's the story of the prodigal son. And the idea is that God is like a father who has someone he cares about so much. And that person goes off, rejects the relationship with the father, messes himself up to such a degree that everything goes totally wrong. He hits rock bottom. And then he wants to get reconciled. And then the amazing thing is, he's like the people that Jesus is hanging out with. He's like the broken. He's like the messed up. Maybe he's like you, and maybe he's like me. The people that have taken wrong steps in life. Maybe you've ignored God all of your life. And God is like a father who reaches out and still cares. But it's this particular verse, and it's almost easy to miss it because you know the story, you know where it's going. But you need to hear the detail of this because this is stone cold beautiful. Jesus says this, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him. Everyone say, saw him.
Saw him.
See, Jesus says, the reason I'm doing what I'm doing, it's not about me, it's about my father. It's about my father's heart for people. And let me tell you what my father is like. What my father does, he sees people. He sees people even when they're far off. There was something about that father, even though he had another son who was perfectly good, he was still scanning the horizon day after day after day after day, looking out a far way off. And even though his eyesight is not what it used to be, somehow this kind of crumpled, broken figure, just limping his way home with the weight of the world upon his shoulders, somehow the father sees, that's my boy's body language. From afar off, he sees him. And Jesus says, I'm doing what I do because my Father in heaven sees people. He sees them where they're at. And the sad fact of the matter is that many people who call themselves Christians, they don't see beyond their own immediate concerns. Christians, actually any of us, let's be frank and honest about this, any of us, we can live in our own little bubble. We can be happy, we can relate to people that are like us, people that are near us, people that are around us. We don't see the needs. We live in a city full of need, but it's very easy to pass through and to not see it because it's a long way off. It's a long way off from my life. It's a long way off from my friends. It's a long way off from my concerns. But we want to be people who see just like God the Father sees. For example, within Bristol, we have the second largest homeless population in the whole of the UK. But very often we become a little bit blinkered to the needs around us, or we just think that they're just there, and who knows what they're doing and why they're doing it. They can be a bit of a nuisance. We can resent them, but there's so many people that we don't see. Women that are caught in the street sex trade, a massive thing in Bristol. And these women, you need to know that if you see them, they're not like a kind of Billy Piper, Secret Diary of a Call Girl, making a great lifestyle choice, Julia Roberts, Pretty Woman. No, we're talking about women, 98% of whom are addicted to a Class A drug, 100% of whom have been abused, physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, abuse in their home, abuse at the hands of people that they trusted. And these women, they are unseen. They are on the margins. We have people coming in as asylum seekers, people that are experiencing great trouble. And we don't see them because they're not like us, because they're not in our kind of college life or university life. Or we don't mix in those kind of social circles. The oppressed, the needy, the single parents, the disabled, the disenfranchised, people coming out of prison who, without any intervention, will be stuck in a cycle of reoffending and being back in prison, reoffending and then back in prison, lives that are going nowhere. But we don't see them because they're literally locked away. And then they're released onto the margins of society. We don't see them. You saw from the video that Kate and I, we got to go to Jordan last year. Just almost this time last year, we were in the Azraq refugee camp that we're raising money for. And that kid that you saw with me and him taking a little picture together, he came bounding up to us when he saw that we got out of our car and we had our cameras. He came up, he said, hey, take a picture of me, take a picture of me, take a picture of me. He said, my name is Hassan. He said, I have very good English. You can interview me if you like. I've been interviewed all the time. I've been on National Geographic. I've been on Canadian television. And I said, well, on behalf of Metro, great to interview you. What was he saying? He was saying, see me. See me. See me that I've got hope. See me that I have got desire. See me that I have a future which has been stolen from me and I want it back. He says, I have learned English. I've been to school in the refugee camp 3 months and now my English is very, very good. And I want to say, and I want to speak on behalf of my people, because we are not just terrorists. We are not bad people. We are like you. See us. See us. See us. We went into the schools where they were teaching the kids. Kids that had been traumatized in ways that you cannot possibly believe. You can't even begin to imagine it. And then there was this bizarre, surreal moment when the teacher said to the kids, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And these kids, some of whom had been out of education for 3 straight years, who were scrabbling along on the underbelly of Jordanian society, trying to find a way back into normality. These kids are putting their hands up and they're saying, "I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a teacher. I want to be a journalist." And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, you're never going to be a doctor. You're never going to be a journalist. You're going to be lucky to be a laborer. And then I look and I see a bit further and I see his hope, his aspiration, his great desire. And I begin to see beyond just the cynical headlines of a refugee crisis that no one seems to be able to know how to handle it. And I'm seeing people. That's what my father does. My father, he looks and he sees from a long way off this figure clothed in rags. He's seeing, that's my child, that's my precious one, that's the one that is so close to me. He sees him. The first thing you have to do, you have to see people. We cannot stay just keeping ourselves complacent and inoculated against the needs and the hurt in the world around us. We have to open our eyes. We have to see. There is huge need and we can do something about it. But it goes on. His father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. Everyone say compassion. Compassion. Now, if you've been around Metro for a little while, you'll know that compassion in the Bible is my favorite word of all time. This word compassion, this is an amazing Greek word. The Greek word for compassion is actually splanknon. Everyone say splanknon. Splanknon. Okay, revision for some of you, brand new for some of you. Splanknon, we get the English word spleen. And so the basic idea is this. It says, when the father saw him, his spleen was moved. I know that's gross, it's disgusting, but that's a literal translation. So if you thought that the Bible was a holy book, think again. He basically says, he sees his boy, his spleen was twisted. Literally, his guts were twisted. Why? Because in the Jewish mindset, everything's 18 inches lower. You don't think with your head, you think with your heart. As a man thinks in his heart, so he is. That's what the Proverbs say. You don't feel with your heart with a little Hallmark moment, a nice little red love heart. No, no, you feel it down here. I mean, when you fall in love, you see that one, and you go all blubbery like Matt was illustrating earlier on. What do you feel? You feel it down here, you know, because you can't eat, and you're all churned up. Or when you're really, really nervous about something, you get butterflies. Where? In your stomach. Not up here, down here. This is where the real emotion is felt. And when someone does something that requires great bravery, great courage, we say, that took real guts. Because that's where the core is, the very center of the most powerful emotions that a human being has. Your spleen is twisted. And so this word is used, and it's a wonderful word. It's only ever used of God. It's only ever used of Jesus. When Jesus comes and he sees 4,000 people and they're starving, hungry, he feels compassion. Not just, oh, it's a little bit of a sad shame. No, it's like he is broken. Something is fundamentally altered at the very core, literally, of who he is. It breaks him in two. He sees a kid that is having a demonic episode and the father's crying out. Jesus has compassion. Two men and they're lepers and they're begging by the city gates as Jesus walks into the city. They have no hope, no future, no chance at all of entering polite society. They cry out, Jesus, he feels something for them. He has this gut-wrenching compassion. And Jesus says, this is what the father is like. He sees the boy from afar off, and he doesn't just say, well, about time. Where do you think you've been, young man? There's no kind of judgmentalism. There's no kind of tutting. There's just a pure, broken passion. We say that this compassion, this splanchnon, it's basically love. We're saying that the Father shows love in its most visceral, literal form. We're talking about a love that's not a soppy sentimentality, but we're talking about a love that is gut-wrenching and totally core to who you have, something that is at the very heart of who you are. And then, when he sees him and he loves him, he says he ran to his son. Could have been a whole host of things that Jesus could have told us about the Father. He could have been, he saw him, he loved him, and so he shouted out to his servants, go bring my boy in. No, he doesn't do that. It could have been, he saw him, he loved him, and so he threw open the doors of the house to welcome the son back. That would be a beautiful story. But it's not the way that Jesus described it. He says, he ran. You need to know, friends, that in those days, in that culture, in that society, people did not run if they were anything kind of to be respected and admired. Not like this wealthy landowner. He's not the person to run. He has someone to run for him. Can you imagine? Let me imagine you. Can you imagine the queen at the Trooping of the Colour running? Excuse me, I'm late, and running. You know, it just would not happen. The Buckingham Palace could be on fire. Prince Philip could be smoldering. She would walk dignified. You don't run if you have anything about you. And yet this father says, I'm so moved. I've got to run. I've got to run towards my boy. And he's running. He's just pelting down the road towards this haggard figure. People are coming out of their houses. People are watching him through the shop windows. They're shouting out, hey, old man, what are you doing? Slow down. He doesn't care. He's not listening. He's just running. Beard flapping in the breeze. Little sandals kicking up a dust cloud. His picking up his skirts, he's running, crazy old man, running. He runs. Why? Because love at that level always has to result in action. And it's not just enough to say welcome or to write a nice song or give a good message or do the right thing. There's something about a kind of guttural response of running. And Jesus says, listen, the reason I do what I do is because this is who my Father is. And this is what God is like. So many people, they think that God is aloof. I think that God is unmoved, like a brick. Doesn't care about you. Divorce, so what? Cancer, happens. Family breakdown, depression, never mind. No. God looks at you. He sees you. He sees the people that you know. He sees them. He feels. And he runs. And Jesus says, look, it's not about me. It's about my Father. This is what my Father does. This is what my Father is like. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why we do love running. Because we see our Father. You say to me, I don't really do running. Well, it's not about you. I don't really do running. I hate running. I think running is for people who are slightly too keen. You know, lycra-clad enthusiasts who've just got too much energy to burn. Or maybe they're just naturally good at it. I'm not naturally good at it. I'm naturally good at sitting down and watching stuff. But it's not about me. It's about my Father. And my Father sees the need that I am blindly oblivious to. He feels on a level that I can't begin to comprehend. And he runs. And you know, for years, I read this story, I heard it preached, and I never realized one particular detail that kind of gives a different flavor to the whole thing. It's the fact that when the father runs and catches up with the son and gathers him up, and the son's like freaked out, he tries to do his speech, you know, that he's been preparing, and he's done that rehearsing thing when you're trying to get it right, say an awkward thing, and he doesn't even let him finish the speech. He then immediately speaks to his servants. He says, put a ring on him, get sandals on his feet, get a robe, fatted calf, kill it. And it took me years to realize, hang on a minute, how can he suddenly be talking to servants? One minute he's in the house, a far way off. Now he's run. He's with the boy. And immediately he's talking to servants. What's happening? Because in the picture of the old man running down the street, you've got to now factor in a bunch of servants behind him, trying to keep up with the old man, doubling over with the exertion of it all, because they're way out of shape, just trying to keep up with the father. I don't love the son like the father does. I don't love the son like the master does, but I've got to keep up with the old man, because I want to be with him. I want to do what makes him happy. And they get there. And they have run with him, and he's able to say, right, great, let's bring my boy home. Let's throw a party. I know that you've messed up. I know that you did things that you didn't feel good about. I know that things took a turn and you weren't expecting them. But I forgive you, I love you, I'm so glad that you've come back home. When we do love running, what we're doing is we're saying we want to be like our Father in heaven, because he's like that. Believe it or not, the best way that we can show the world outside these four walls what God is like is we be like him. We see, we feel, we love, and then we run. And with love running, what you've got is you've got this mass run of people who are running in the name of love. They're running because not that they're good at it or they like it or they get a buzz from it. Quite frankly, it's a pain. It's a nuisance. You'd rather not do it. It's embarrassing asking people for money. It's humiliating to be going around and getting people to sponsor you. But it's not about you and it's not about me. We're doing it because we absolutely have to see love running. And there's something magnificent about it. One of the guys in the video there, he was minding himself on the very first time that we did Love Running. Minding his own business, 2009, he's doing the Bristol 10K. Why? Because he's a little bit chubby, wants to lose a little bit of weight, so he puts himself into the run. He's actually not that good, and so he's constantly being overtaken. But he notices that he's being overtaken by these guys in the red T-shirts with the love heart on the back. And he sees something about them. There's a crackle, there's an energy, there's a zip, there's a spark, there's something other, something unusual, something different. He goes and at the end of the race, he finds one of the red shirts. He says, listen, I got to know, who are you? I want to join your group. You look like the best group ever. I mean, you're going around, you're high-fiving one another, you're cheering each other on, and there's hundreds of you. You're black and you're white, you're young and you're old, you're super fast, and quite frankly, some of you still haven't finished yet. You're that bad. And yet there's a commonality, there's a communion, there's something very, very exciting and something very, very beautiful. And he said afterwards, as a young single man, you look like you could be a good place to find a woman. And they turned around and they said, I tell you what this is, this club, well, this is the Church of Jesus Christ. This is the Protestants and the Catholics, the Baptists and the Methodists. This is the Anglicans and the Free Churches. This is the crazy metro churches. This is the people of Jesus doing what Jesus does, being like the Father. And he said, oh, nuts. I'm an atheist. I hate church. But he was there. He was there that Sunday evening in church. I met him there for the very first time. And he carried on coming because somehow he'd keyed into something really fantastic, really wonderful. And pretty soon he became a Christian. He became one of our leaders. And yeah, sure enough, he did meet a girl. I got to marry them about 2 years later. And you would have seen him in the video because he came back early from honeymoon after I'd married them. They came back the following Sunday, got married on the Saturday, back on a week on the Sunday. He ran in her wedding dress, and she ran in his morning suit. Hilarious. And now I get to dedicate their children and see them finding Jesus, and suddenly love is running, and people are getting it. Listen, if you're not a Christian here, if you're not a church person, you're not sure about faith, maybe you're a little bit on the outside looking in, maybe you've been brought along, maybe you've been coerced, blackmailed, pressurized, but you're here, let me tell you, you don't have to believe any of it to see that this is fundamentally a good thing. Your best chance at not only getting in shape for yourself, but doing something profoundly good for the needs of the city, and something that does an absolute change in the lives of 15,000 refugee children in Azraq. And I just want to say to you, you can do this. In fact, we want to have more people outside of the church doing love running than inside of the church. Do I want people here who are Metro Christian members to do love running? Well, duh, obviously, you're all going to do it. That's why we're doing it. This is what it's for. The point is, I want you to get your friend to do it. I want you to get your flatmates to do it. I want you to get your course to do it. I want you to get your boss to do it. I want you to get your intern to do it. I want you to get your neighbor to do it. I got my neighbor to do it, and my neighbor, wow, became my friend, and my friend then became my very dear best friend. And this is what happens, because it pulls us together. We get fit, we get friends, and then we change the world. One girl, she worked at the university, a postgrad, doing research. She had this situation. She would tell me about it. Philip, there's this other girl. She's in the department, and she is very, very aggressively anti-Christian. I mean, she hates Christian stuff. And every time that I put out a flyer, she tears them down. I will put out stuff, you know, come to the carol service, or we're having an alpha course. And then I'll come down the next day. My flyers are in the bin. She said, I went away on holiday, but before I did, I put some love running flies around the common room and I put some on the notice board. And I came away, went on holiday, came back a week later. I knew full well all my flyers would be in the bin, all my stuff would be ripped off the notice board because she's that aggressively anti-Christian. She said, I came back. There's my flyer on the board. There's my flyers on the common room table. There's a sign-up sheet put there by my friend. I go into the uni gym, and there she is on the treadmill training with a red Love Running t-shirt on her. Suddenly, we do things where we think, actually, we can share this together. We can go on a bit of a journey together. And this is not just for you. It is for you. But this is for your friends. This is for your colleagues. This is for your family. This is for the people that don't believe, that have a problem with church, that not sure about God, that think Christians are stuck-up, vain, conceited, judgmental hypocrites. This is for them. This is something that they can get involved in. And we say, listen, come and join us. Come and join us. We're doing a good thing. And actually, if you're not into the running, don't worry, because we'll provide running clubs for you. We've got a launch seminar where we'll do some stuff. The running shops are getting behind us, and they're giving us massive discounts. The Great Run Company are partnering with us because they see that this is fundamentally, inarguably, a good thing. And we will take you through it. And listen, if you can run for 30 seconds now and then walk to catch up for 30 seconds and then run another 30 seconds and then walk for 30 seconds. If you can do that now in 10 weeks, we can have you running the 10K. It's not going to be Sebastian Coe. It's not going to be Mo Farah, but you will get through it. And actually, you will enjoy it more than you think you will. And then you'll discover that there's a whole bunch of people out there and they want to give, because we look at our world and we see the pain and we see the injustice and we see the inhumanity to man and we want to do something about it, but we feel powerless and we feel like we can't, and we just want an opportunity to contribute, to make our little mark, to make a bit of a difference. And what you do is you help people to do that. And so what we're going to do in a few moments is that we're going to pray. And then we're going to sign ourselves up. Now, before you freak out, you're not signing yourself up. You're just signing yourself up. What you're signing yourself up for, what you're signing yourself up for is you're signing up to say, I'm interested. Okay? We haven't even opened registration yet. It will open in a few days, a week or so. But what you're saying is, I think I would like to register my interest and see how it goes. And sure, you may actually not be able to do it in the event. It may be that you check your diary and you realize that you're at that wedding. Never mind. Or maybe you've got something with you health-wise and you're just not able to do it. It's okay. There'll be other ways to get involved. But what we're doing tonight is we're saying together, let's get a sense of momentum. Let's put ourselves forward and let's get ourselves in the loop and let's position ourselves so that we can ask our friends to join with us. I have so many friends in the church that are in the church because they got along through Love Running first. It's hard sometimes to share your faith. It's hard to bring up the conversation without feeling like you're trying to be some morally superior, holier than thou. But it's easy to say, hey, it's January, put on a few pounds, and it'd be great to get into shape. And actually, this is a great way. They've got some people, they'll help us. They've got some training things that we can go to. And actually, there's nothing like doing something like this with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, because it lifts you up higher than an eagle. It raises you up. I don't know the rest of the lyrics. But when people say to us, why are you doing this? You guys should be in a church on Sunday. I remember I literally went to the Great Run Company who organized this whole thing. I spoke to one of their marketing people. I said, we want to do this. She said, but you're a church. I said, yeah, your point. Well, you should be in your church. No. Because this is what my Father does. He sees and he loves and he runs. I may not love with the depth that the Father in heaven loves, because how can I? I'm only mortal, I'm only human. But a bit of it is rubbing off on me, and I want to engage with what I see my Father doing. So this is why we do love running. We want to see love run. Here's the big idea. Love running is for those that want to be like their Father in heaven, to see those that are unseen, to love with the Father's love, and to run to where the needs are. Let's pray. Dear God, I pray that we would somehow catch the vision that you have for this. That it's not about some lycra-clad bikinis, but it's about regular people doing something exceptional, extraordinary, beautiful. And I want to pray, Lord, that not only would we sign ourselves up to do this, but I pray that we would engage our friends. I want to pray that you'd surprise us by how easy it is to invite others to do this. And I want to pray that we would see not just ones and twos, but fives and tens joining in with this. Lord, we want to see rugby clubs and hockey clubs and frisbee clubs doing this. We want to see office parties doing it. We want to see neighborhoods and streets. We want to see whole flats and houses doing this. We want to see corridors in hall doing this. We want this to be a revolution where people suddenly see, wow, here's something that I can do, and I can be part of something so much bigger, and I can get caught up in love running. And I pray that Father God, we would get closer to you. I pray for those of us that are not sure about faith, that somehow this would be an easy way in, a way for us to explore what it means to be on the mission that Jesus has for the Father. And I pray for those of us that have been Christians for years, Lord, that you'd kick us into a new gear, make us excited about what we are and who we serve and what we do. Help us now, Lord Jesus, I pray. In Jesus' name, amen.